Life Audio.
Welcome to the Jesus is All We Need podcast with me, your host, Jason Sawtelle. This is the show where we dig into the personal testimonies of people in the news, celebrities, and folks just like you and me in a way that will leave you encouraged. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of the Jesus is All We Need podcast. Welcome to this episode of the Jesus is All We Need podcast. I'm so excited to have a mentor of mine, Chief Gary Ludwig, on this show. Chief Ludwig, which you're going to hear me call him Gary every once in a while, but as a firefighter, even though I'm retired, he's still going to be a chief in my eyes. He started his career in 1977 when I was just 3 years old. Sorry, Chief, I had to put that out there. He finished up in 2023 and did 46 years in the fire service. If I was to go down his whole resume here, you guys would just be flabbergasted. So we'll just pick it apart throughout the interview. But one of the highlights here that really impresses me is he was the president of the International Association of Fire Chiefs from 2019 to 2020, which those of you in the fire service know were some pretty crazy times. Anyways, Chief Gary Ludwig, thank you for coming on to the show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Jason, what an honor it is to be here with you. There's no other words to describe it, just a pure honor. That's all there is.
I appreciate it, man. You know, it's so funny. You know, when people hear about mentors, you know, they always think of someone in the firehouse or, you know, maybe at a firehouse over the chief level and stuff. But I had been reading your articles, and I believe the first ones I saw were in Firehouse Magazine many years ago, long before the internet even came around and stuff. You were writing articles, correct?
Yes. Actually, I started writing for, it was a magazine called, I think, 911 Magazine or something like that back in the early 90s, I think. And then I was writing some columns for the IFC. And then next thing you know, I got a phone call from Harvey Eisner that his EMS columnist had died, Rich Adams, who was writing for Firehouse for many years, and asked if I'd be interested in writing some columns for Firehouse. That was about 1998, Jason. And 22 years later, I was still writing for Firehouse, a monthly column. What an honor it was to write for such an iconic magazine such as that. And I don't even know, I'm writing again for them online. I just published an article yesterday about artificial intelligence and its impact on fire and EMS in the future.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm definitely going to have to check that out. You know what's so cool about the Firehouse Magazine, why it's just embedded into my fire department DNA, is because I started my career in 1993. And, you know, there were all the different medicals, the gems that were out there. But it was so cool to have a magazine dedicated just to the fire service. And, you know, let's be honest, when we got it, we all flipped through real quick to look for the different fires that we could see in the different pictures. And there was no YouTube back then. There's no online like all the young guys have nowadays. So it was such an honor. But anyways, Chief, going through that, let's talk about your career. We said you started in 1977. What fire department did you start with?
I was with St. Louis in 1977. Wow. I was just 2 months out of high school. I was an 18-year-old kid, and they were hiring at 18 back then. So today it's 21. So,
right. That's how I got my job, was at the age of 18, also back when I was 18 years old and a California driver's license out here in California. So let's talk about what it's like, because I have my own experiences going straight from where I should have been in school to now going into some of the craziest situations you could imagine as an Oakland firefighter. And I know that St. Louis and Oakland have a lot of parallels in the size of the city and the types of buildings we have. So let's hear your background of what it was like as a young kid in the St. Louis Fire Department.
So I like to say I was a snot-nosed kid, that I thought I knew everything. And then I began to realize I didn't know too much at all. And my first call was, St. Louis was pretty racially divided at the time. North St. Louis was most of the black community, and South St. Louis was pretty much the white community. I had never been in North St. Louis. I'd never been north of the downtown area, if you know about the geographics of St. Louis. And my first call was in North St. Louis, on the fifth floor of a housing project. And thank God we had senior people who knew what they were doing. And I walked the elevator. It was for apparently an OB delivery. And I walked the elevator. He says, "Nope, son, we don't take the elevators in the housing projects." And so there's one of those housing projects, you know, that go for blocks. And they're 9, 10, 11 stories. They're just made of concrete. And, you know, they're packing all these people in, which the urbanologist found out that doesn't work, that when you pack all these people into one place. And so he says, "We walked stairways." So we walked up 5 floors, and I'll never forget that smell, that summer smell, the urine in the concrete steps, and, you know, that experience. And we get up there, and this lady is eminently going to deliver. And being the new guy, I had to go in the ambulance. And I had no training other than an advanced first aid card is all I had. And I was in more of a panic than she was. But that was my first experience. And what an honor and a treasure it was to be able to help people and to be in a role to make a difference.
Right. And when you speak that, Chief, you're preaching to my soul right now, because when I was born and raised in Southern California in a predominantly white town, and it's no fault of myself, I wasn't, you know, inherently racist or anything like that, but it's all I knew was hanging around other young guys like myself. And when I landed in Oakland and my firehouse was literally just a few doors down from where the Black Panther Party started, it was one of the biggest blessings in my life, because I learned the true word of diversity, God's diversity, yeah. which I get the buzzword, and I'm not trying to be political here, not political, but there's this buzzword of diversity, of people say to embrace it. Well, God says, "I created diversity, so you better embrace it." And when I got to experience all the things I did in West Oakland and with the community there and hearing, you know, the struggles that people had that I'd never really known about and everything, it just made me a stronger man and also a stronger firefighter, too, because I got to actually bring true compassion and empathy as opposed to like a fake compassion and empathy, if that makes sense. Do you kind of understand where I'm going with that?
Yes, it does. If you have your eyes and your heart open, it leads you to say, you see others that are not as blessed as you are. Mm-hmm. And, and Jesus never would have turned those individuals away. And so I've been on calls already in homes, and I've said to firefighters, "What are you doing?" Because if we go into the low economic person's home, and they think it's okay to start smashing stuff. You know, and they start smashing cabinets and kitchen cabinets and windows. And a lot of these people don't have insurance. Right. Then they go to the nice neighborhoods. They fight a fire in a nice home. Oh, and they're putting down salvage covers on the carpet so we don't mess the carpet up. And they're doing all these things. Why don't you treat both the same? If anybody needs tender, loving care to their property, it's the person who doesn't have a lot of money. And when I point that out to people, they go, "My God, you're right. You're absolutely right." And so I don't know why we think we can treat people that we think are lesser than us different. But I have encountered some firefighters who do that. Not all, but some. And it just takes education. If you're going to be a Christian, we treat all the same. And again, it's that application of diversity. And exactly. I concur with you completely, Jason.
Yeah, you know, I try to explain it like this. Because you know, when we become Christians, our DNA is now becoming more Christ-like, but we're being pulled by the flesh, which is of this world. It's not a past to be bad or a past to misbehave, but it's an understanding of, hey, this is why we need to correct some things. And I've seen the same things. And over time, what I would try to tell the new guys, I said, hear me out. Here's a tough story that happened about 25 years ago. We had a local shopkeeper down the block from the firehouse that, you know, we just grab our radios and walk down there and grab, you know, some donuts or ho-hos or whatever every once in a while to support our local shop, even though it was a liquor store. And we made friends with the family. Well, one day, the place was robbed. The shopkeeper who we were friends with was shot and killed. But he also, like a West Oakland shopkeeper does, had a firearm and he was able to pop a couple rounds off at the bad guy. When we got there, I had to treat the shooter with just as much respect, dignity, and care as I did the shopkeeper. And the guys are like, was it hard? I'm like, dude, it was hard. Every ounce of me wanted to not help that guy because he just killed a friend of mine. But we were not called to be the judges on that. We were called to provide the highest level of care, regardless if that guy wanted it or not. That is our job. And if you don't like that job, go find another line of work. And there's a few hard things that I would go tough on. But then I would soften up back at the firehouse and understand where guys go, what a dirtbag, dude. What a horrible human being. You know, what an awful person to do that. So I didn't act like as holier than thou and better than everyone else. Like, oh, here comes Jason, you know, the fire god going to just give everyone grace and stuff. No, I would try to do that. And, you know, I agree that we need to give compassion to everyone. And sometimes it's tough and we have to put ourselves aside and make others higher than us. Don't you agree? In the fire service, that's one of the major things we need to do, is put others higher than ourselves.
I agree completely. We're there to serve and we're not to be served. I know there are some attitudes out there. Well, hey, look at me. I'm a firefighter and, you know, I'm of a certain stature, but at the same, sorry, my dog's.
Okay. I love your dogs. They're great.
She wanted to get into the action here. So this is, This is rainy. So for those that can't see, my dog has jumped up into the video screen here. So, okay.
It's baby. Okay. This is a dog-friendly show, so we love having dogs, even though the listeners are not going to be able to see your beautiful dog. It's a dog-friendly show, yeah. Chief, so don't worry about that.
All right, wonderful. Yeah, it's they're like our kids. So anyway, we love our kids and we love our dogs, so they're all God's creation. So
I fully agree.
Where were we at? You asked me.
No, we're just talking about, you know, putting ourselves lower and others above us, that in the fire service we serve because, yeah, we run across people that we feel like we get all puffed up and, oh, you know, I went to a fire and I pulled people out, you know, and did that. And I'll give you the floor again. But what I like to say in that is, I don't want to go too tough, but when someone says, oh, I grabbed someone out of fire and I did this, that, and the other, well, I like to take the I out of it. And it's, we were called to go do that. And we did our job. You know what I mean? Now, is it cool? Of course it's cool. Do you give a guy a pat on the back? Of course you give the guy a pat on the back. But I'll tell you what, every grab I ever had was usually because I was working overtime or something, you know? So it was just, I was just lucky enough to be in that position, you know, to make that grab.
I agree. And I would even take it a step further is that God gave you the talents to be able to do that.
Right.
He gave you the education and provided for the training. You know, even though you had instructors, you know, I believe we're still guided in a certain right. direction. And I think, you know, God gave us those talents. All my talents that I have, I believe they come from God, that He has given me a brain. He's given me the hands to be able to do something. He's given me the foresight to be able to critically think and make objective assessments, be able to do what to do, know what to do. So, yes, I'll say yes, and I'll concur with everything you're saying, and that is that we're there to serve. And it is cool to make a grab. It is cool to save a life. And it goes back to what I said earlier in the podcast, and that is that we make a difference.
Right.
That is, it is cool to make a difference and contribute in some fashion to what we have been put on this earth to do.
Right. And I love the way that you say that, because when I was younger, you know, a lot of people know my story was I was an atheist, or I wasn't even an atheist. I was a nothing. I was just an angry young man who grew up in an abusive home and then became a firefighter, hoping the job would make me better. Yeah, we all know how that works out, you know. But what was told to me one time, was talking to a pastor, was I was one of those young guys. And I kept saying, well, I'm helping people and I'm doing stuff and I've been called to that. And he said, listen, Jason, you're about halfway there, but you were given these gifts and abilities, just like everything you just preached to me there. You were given these skills. You were given this physical fitness and you have been called to do this service by him. So it's because of him and for him that you're working. But he called me out and he's all, but you're kind of being a little arrogant right now. You're all I, me, and it hit me hard. And sometimes we do need to be hit hard, because I tell guys, I've never learned anything when I'm sitting at the firehouse holding down a recliner, other than it's nice to hold down a recliner. Yes. All learning comes from those tough situations. And last thing I'll throw out there is, just like a room and contents fire, I have never learned a ton once I became more seasoned from a room and contents fire that didn't challenge me. It's a fire that challenged me that all learning came from. Chief, in your career, do you find that you've had some good learning points from challenging situations?
Absolutely. Including sometimes the mistakes you make. If you, as I say, our mistakes are the rent we pay for living. And what we do is that if we make a mistake, it's okay. We embrace our mistakes. We figure it out. That's why I was never a big disciplinarian as a chief, because the majority of firefighters don't do anything wrong intentionally. Now, if you do something wrong intentionally, you know, now you put me in a different position and now I have to change your behavior, and it may include discipline. But the majority of people don't do things wrong. I talk about this in my book, Fully Involved Leadership. They do it for three different reasons. They're unwilling, unaware, or unable. And if they're unaware, we as leaders should be teaching them what is the correct way. If they made a mistake, let's figure it out so we don't do it again. If they're unable, let's figure out what do you need to do the job. Do we need to rearrange, say, the drug box or the cabinetry on the fire engine or whatever the case might be, so the tools are more accessible? It's only if you're unwilling to do the job do I, as a chief, have to look at changing your behavior, and that might be through discipline. And the majority of firefighters are not like that. Now, we have a few. I will say that, you know, they want to test the waters and see what they can get away with. And they do it intentionally. But my position is, let's teach you to become a better firefighter. There's nothing better, as I say in the firehouse, than an experienced officer, whether it's a company officer or a chief officer, with a passion and the same firehouse. There's a rookie with passion. Put the two together and they're an unstoppable force.
Right. That's so good. And to back up what you're saying, because I'm in total agreement on it, in Oakland, you know, we have a very good local there too. It's local 55, which is a low number, which we know is very involved in the fire service. And our union president told our class early on, he said, if you guys make mistakes, we got your back. You know, we've got you. He's all, if you purposely mess up, we don't have you. We don't have you, because that's the culture we created, that we didn't want no nonsense. Now, if a guy's fooling around and again needs to be corrected, okay, that's one thing. But if you're purposely showing up on the job and misusing what you've been called to use, they didn't want you even at the union level, you know, and it just created a great environment, in my opinion, which you don't want to handle stuff in-house to hide it. Cause I'm against that, you know, like, oh, we're going to handle that in-house when it needs to go, what we would call to downtown. But I never saw anything go downtown because we were given all the skills and abilities. And so we're officers to rightfully handle it in-house, that we didn't need to take it to the chiefs, you know? And do you find when you train your guys like that, you'll find a lot of stuff can be handled at the local level, or you can kick it back as a chief and have them handle it?
Yeah. Cause it goes up the chain, because I'll never forget my city manager saying to me, there's probably a lot of stuff that you don't tell me. I go, yep, you don't need to know. We take care of it.
Right.
Now, if it rises to your level and you're about to get broadsided by something, or the council's about to get broadsided by something, I'm going to let you know about it so you don't get broadsided. But if we can handle it, we're going to take care of it. So it goes all the way, just not at the firehouse level, but it also happens in the administrative offices. And that's what, and I used to tell her, hey, you're paying me to be the fire chief. If I have to come to you with everything, then you don't need a fire chief. You should just be the fire chief. Same way with a company officer. If I got a company or a battalion chief come to me, you know, I got this problem, I need you to deal with it. Well, I don't need you, because that's what you're supposed to do. That's what I'm paying you to do, is take care of it. So I'm okay with stuff being taken care of in the station. Now, if it rises to that next level, you can't leave it in the station. You got right to bring it up forward. So, but the majority, I fully believe majority of stuff can be handled at the company level.
Right.
And that's what we pay that officer. I always say the company officer is probably the most critical position in the fire department. Just think about it. We give you a $750,000 piece of equipment to manage. We got you in a fire station that's probably worth over $1 million that we're asking you to manage. We're asking you to manage the lives of these three people. I assume you have four staffing in Oakland, five. I'm not sure what you have, but whatever you got in your company.
Yeah, four on the engines, five on the trucks, yeah.
Yeah, same way with St. Louis and Memphis where I work. And so we're asking you to do all these awesome things and this incredible and phenomenal responsibility, and we're paying you to do it. You know, if I can't have you manage a personnel issue, you got to bring it to me all the time, then I'm scared to death that you're managing well over $2 million worth of equipment, you know, between right. the truck and all the other stuff and the station and everything else. If you can't manage a personnel issue at its lowest level, then I have to question your ability to be a company officer and your decision-making on an emergency scene.
That's so good, Chief. And you know what I love about that is, when I made lieutenant, I made it pretty young, and I don't want to go into it too far, but it just wasn't the spot for me. So eventually I talked to the chief and said, I just want to go back to firefighter. It's just best for me because we had a lot going on in our lives at the time. But with that being said, when I was in that role of lieutenant, the biggest thing that hit me was when the battalion chief came by the firehouse and he sits me down in a really cool talk and he says, yes, you're responsible for these guys here. But check this out. You are also the fire officer for the surrounding 20,000 people in this district. And all of a sudden, that job became super real, you know, because obviously my crew, if I don't have a safe crew, I can't go out and keep other people safe. But knowing that it was my job to also keep those 20,000 people as safe as possible, you know, because a lot of times the circumstances won't let us save them. And you know that. And so, but that was like, it sent chills down my spine at that moment because it became... The group of us, the four, the nine of us were a group, but there was something so much bigger. And it was 20,000 people who were depending upon us if they couldn't get out of a building or if they got shot or got in a car wreck. And it made the job real. And I just hope that if there is a young firefighter out there listening to this or someone that feels like they're called to promote, that they hear that, how real the job is. Because at the firefighter's level, let's be honest, it can be fun and games at time, you know, because you don't have those, or your responsibility level is to what? Follow an order and do your job. You know, sometimes you don't think about those 20,000 people. And when that becomes real, it's definitely an eye opener.
So I'll say it another, you just said it one way. I'll say it another way. I used to tell my company officers and battalion chiefs on shift, and that is that you're the fire chief at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I expect you to be me and make decisions that are going to impact this department and impact the image that we project as a department, the image that we project as a professional. That is all on your shoulders at 3 o'clock in the morning. You are the fire chief.
Right.
You said, you know, you're the officer for 20,000 people. I would say it's almost the same way, but I said it in different contexts. So,
right. No, that's so good. I love that. Now, with that being said, I absolutely love your book, Fully Involved Leadership, Successful Strategies in Leadership from the Firefighter to the Fire Chief. Amazing book. But there's another book I want to talk about, too, which is called Divine Leadership, Applying Christian Values in the Workplace. And the reason I want to talk about this is because I don't want to be like, oh, the fire service is church. And oh, the fire service is God-like or Christ-like. But there are so many Christ-like things in the fire service that guys are doing that they don't realize they're doing that you pick up on and you pour into this book. Can you give us a little background on why you wrote your book, Divine Leadership?
Well, one of the principal reasons why I wrote it was that we in leadership positions should be like Jesus Christ, that it is to serve. He came on this earth, and he's talking about servant leadership. There's no more of an iconic representation of servant leadership than Jesus Christ. And so, and that's how I feel we should be as leaders in a management role or in a leadership role, is that we're here to serve. We're not here to be served. And as an example is, you know, some fire chiefs or chief officers might think, the firefighters beneath me, their job is to idolize me and serve me as the chief officer, the company officer, or whatever, or as the fire chief. But that's not the case. My job was to make sure that you as the firefighter, not you, Jason, but you as the firefighter, I'm here to serve you to make sure that you have all the tools, the education, the resources, whatever you need to do the job, because you're serving Mrs. Smith, the citizen in the street, the citizen in their home, the citizen who is calling you on the worst day potentially of their life. And they're turning to you and asking you for help to serve them, to deal with this crisis that they're going through. So it's not about serving me. It's about serving the firefighter. And again, not to be repetitive, but to make sure they have all the tools, the resources, the education, the training to be able to go out and do the job, take care of Mrs. Smith and do it in a safe fashion so that they go home at the end of their shift also. And that's what Jesus Christ advised us was.
Right.
No, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Chief. My apologies. But you nailed it on that level because, I often tell people, I said, in faith and fire service, think about this. People would say, Jason, did you ever pray on your way to a fire or when you're pulling up? And, I'm not talking about just your room and contents, but when you pull up and that behemoth is blowing out the third floor and there's people hanging out the fourth floor, those fires were like, whoa, this is going to be rough once we get to that fire floor, And I said, actually, I never did because time to pray was kind of over and now it was action. I had to show up fully equipped with highest level of training and the best people around me. Well, let's talk about when we go into spiritual battle. Yes, I'm praying. Don't get me wrong. But when I'm in the midst of something, I need the best people around me, fully equipped and highly trained to go at it. And I'm not downplaying the prayer part. But sometimes I tell the Christians in my life and the young firefighters, this is why you constantly fill yourself full of good knowledge that you need to go out there and get the job done. Because when it's go time, you may not have that moment to pray. God's answered your prayers and be like, bro, I've given you everything you need. Now get at it. And if you did not equip yourself, you are going to find yourself in a bad position,
And I agree. That's the last thing. You're thinking action. What am I going to do? What's my next step? You're thinking about all the what ifs on your actions. Where I find myself praying is after the event, in thankfulness that everything worked out for me and for the victims, or if the victims suffered in some fashion.
Right.
And I really feel emotionally attached to that, the event, that let's offer a prayer for them. That God provides them with strength and comfort to deal with the crisis that they have. I'm still friends with a lady in Champaign, Illinois. She lost her son in a fire in 2015. And her name is Joy Sheehan. And his anniversary, or one, this month, just last week, his birthday happened. And then 2 days later, or a day later, was what the anniversary of his death in the fire. Him and another lady died in this fire together, in a house fire. And Joy and I and the whole family, we became very close. And so on the anniversary, I let Joy know, I'm saying a prayer for you and your family today, that God provides you with strength and comfort on this critical date in this year. Because it reminds you of the death of, his name was actually Christian also, Christian Sheehan, and it reminds them of the loss that they had. And that's the second son she's lost. She had another son who, had some mental and physical challenges. I think he was about 8 or 9 when they lost him. So you think about, the pain that family has gone through and the suffering that they've experienced to lose 2 children. Now they got 3 beautiful girls also, but still they've lost 2 sons. But I still offer prayers to them. And here we are, 9 years later, after something like that. And so my prayer has come after, and I concur with you completely that it's not time to say a prayer when you're thinking about the what is and what you're going to do next.
Right. Yeah. Your mind's already engaged in the circumstances. No, that's so good, Jim. And, actually kind of take a little side to her because that caught me so much. And that's what I love about your leadership. Is I've seen you talk and I've seen you stand in front of, quote, secular crowds. And you're not preaching the gospel to them. You're not preaching that, but you're bringing it to them with your values. You know what I mean? It's like when you're standing in front of a city council or when you're at the IAFC giving a presentation, I can see your Christian values coming out of you, but you're saying things that everyone can hear. And that's something that I'm going to ask you to give us a little advice on. There's so many Christians out there that are scared to profess their faith for the obvious reasons, because the fire world can be a tough world to do that in. But there's also some who feel like they have been called to evangelize absolutely everyone in front of them. How do you as a chief have that proper balance? Because I know it's a balance you need to hold, you know, and not go too far one way or the other.
Yeah, and actually our podcast is me going too far in one direction because I don't yeah, I don't typically display this type of talk and this type of, you know, in those roles. But I think what I display, and I never really thought about it until you said it, is it's about treating people right. Because, again, what did Jesus Christ do? You know, how did he treat people? And so that Christian value, I believe, is I've seen so many chiefs that use their position as a bully, that they have the authority, they have the bully pulpit. They think it's okay to abuse people. They think it's all right to treat people in a mistrustful way. I worked with one chief in Memphis, and of course I won't mention his name, but we were in a staff meeting. He was on the senior command staff, and he made a comment, and I just looked at him in disbelief. He said, I enjoy pissing people off just to the point where they explode.
As a leader? And
yeah.
I mean, I can see a senior man joking at the dinner table, okay, but a true leader? No, oh my God, sorry. But
I just looked at him in like disbelief with my mouth open. You do what? I worked with a guy in St. Louis. He was a captain, and he used to say, he said one day, and I just like, what? He said, when I drive to work that morning, I think who I'm going to screw with that day. And I'm like, Pat, you're going to do what? I mean, what kind of... So, and I attribute all this to my mom, and I talk about my mom in both of my books that you mentioned today. My mom was such a woman that, you talk about a Christian woman, she was actually my role model. I didn't realize what she was until it was over with, and, you know, and she was really gone. But I started analyzing, you know, how I treated people and how I dealt in leadership and all that. And my mom was just this Christian woman that never had an ill word for anyone. She was at the church every day. First she went to Mass. We were Catholics. And she's either stayed after Mass to clean the drapes or scrape the wax off the candle holders or whatever she could do. But she loved God so much. But she just treated people in such a beautiful way. If I could just tell a quick story. We talk about treating people right in different levels of social class. So growing up in South St. Louis like I did, it's a like any other urban areas, it's compacted. We have homes that are next to each other, 36 inches apart. There's an alley behind our home. And in the early 60s, how they would pick up trash is that a trash truck would come down the alley and you had your individual cans out there. And there were metal cans. And these three men would walk. Well, actually, one would drive and two would walk behind the truck. And they would... It was dirty and heavy work, and they would have to pick up the trash can, carry it to the back of the trash truck, dump it in, and take it back. Smelly, dirty. It was cold. It was hot. They were low paid. They weren't well educated. But you know what my mom would do every time she heard them coming down the alley? She would go out there with ice water and sandwiches, and she would feed them and give them water if they wanted some, or refill their water jugs if they already had. And I thought about that later in life, like, a lot of people would think, well, these are trash men. They're low on the social scale of who we are as a society. Why are you treating them like that? My mom never saw it that way. She believed in treating people in a genuine, humane, and dignified way. And she was my role model. And I carried that through my life. And when people tell me, I'm going to think who I'm going to screw with as I'm driving to work, or my job is to piss people off just to the point where they explode and I back off. That's not even anywhere in my creed because I thank God my mom, it was my role model. In my head, I had a great dad too, but my mom, her Christian values really, really, really were part of my fabric is who I am. So.
That's so, no, anyway, thank you. No, don't say sorry at all. That story is going to bless so many people, including me, because, you know, honestly, Chief, like I said, the first 28 years of my life, I had bad role models. The only time you heard the word Jesus Christ was when my dad and I were in a screaming match together, you know, before we were ready to go at it. I had no positivity in my life. And when I got into the fire department, I was one of those guys, but hear me out. I didn't have a true heart of wanting to hurt people, but I was hurting so bad. I was just that guy at the firehouse that everyone would laugh out because I was the tough guy. You know, I'd beat on the new kids, be mean or anything. But I had a captain of mine who was a Christian, who was the same thing. His mom raised him, a good Christian Baptist woman and stuff from Louisiana. And he told me, and he is the one who held tight to me when I was in my worst times. Like, there's a point even in my book where I literally cursed a pastor out of our firehouse who was their chaplain. We just came back from a double fatality fire where a mom and her daughter died. And I just wasn't in the mood, and this chaplain's being nice. And I lit into this chaplain. And check this out, Chief. My captain should have written me up. And honestly, that was probably a day on the beach I deserved. Okay. Because I lit into that man like you couldn't believe. But my captain and that pastor both gave me grace, because my captain was like, yo, go take your shower, calm down. But he made sure I could hear him. And when he started to apologize, the pastor, he made sure I could hear it as I was walking away. He says, I'm really sorry about Jason. He's just in a hard place right now. And the pastor cut him off and said, it's my fault, meaning the pastor was saying it was the pastor's fault, claiming it himself, saying, I shouldn't have approached Jason like that. Now, check this out. Neither one of those dudes did anything wrong. I was fully in the wrong, but because of their godliness within inside them, they saw that I needed what they had, and they were compassionate to me. And it's the first time I ever felt grace. And so when you have guys like you and gals like you, whoever it is in the fire service that are pouring compassion out onto others, I'm telling you, bro, people are witnessing it all around you, including the most junior guy or girl on the crew, you know? So I just applaud you on that so much, Chief. And the other thing I want to throw out too, this podcast is called the Jesus Is All We Need podcast. So I love getting my tough fireman buddies on here and talking about faith outside of work, or if inside of work, because, you know, so have at it, man. Because usually we're talking tactics and leadership and this and everything. Like, nah, bro, we're talking about Jesus here. So have at it.
That's cool. And the only reason I said, sorry, I apologize, was I thought maybe my story went on too long. And I, you know, I dominated too much of the conversation. So that's what I was apologetic about.
Don't worry about it.
But but if I could have a chance to talk about my mom, who I lost in 2010, you know, that, I get a chance, because she was a role model to me. She wasn't educated. You know, I'm talking to my cousins the other day who are from, she had a twin sister, and those are cousins from that twin. And I said, did my mom have a high school education? I never heard her talk about it. And they said, no, our mothers had to go to work, because, you know, we came, you know, my grandparents were poor. They immigrated from Germany, and so they had to go to work. They couldn't finish high school. But their mother finished her GED, and I don't think my mom ever finished her GED. I never heard any discussion along those lines. So she wasn't educated. She wasn't smart, you know, where she could do calculus through analytic geometry or any of those, any of those types of things, but what she had was a heart, a compassionate heart, a heart of a Christian that treated others correctly and treated them right, and was always wanting to do for others, because that's what Jesus Christ did.
Right. That's so good. And I love hearing that, because, you know, people know, some know and some don't know. You know, I dropped out of high school from 9th to 10th grade. I got thrown out of school. And the only reason I went back to get my GED. Yeah. So I was skateboarding by a firehouse, and the firefighters were really cool to me. And this one hardware store was like, hey, you can't skateboard here. And the firefighters like, hey, we got a big backyard. Do you want to skateboard there? You know, and we're talking 90s. So I don't know what the liabilities are nowadays and stuff. But regardless, those guys were cool to me, and they said, hey, have you ever thought about being a firefighter? Because, you know, I was athletic at the time. And I'm like, what does that take? And they're like, well, you have to have a high school diploma and be 18 years old. And I was like, yeah, I'm out on that job because I don't have a high school diploma. But I knew once I heard a little bit about their job, I wanted it so bad that I went back and I got my GED on my own. And then it was a CDF for Cal Fire at the time down in Southern California. I went back to that firehouse, because that's when seasonal employees would apply straight to the fire station. And that captain hired me on the spot, man. And that's where my fire career took off and stuff. So it was kind of a cool entryway, you know, and stuff. And I tell people, if you get bit by the bug and you want it, go get it. But hey, Chief, last thing, because I don't want to take up too much of your time either, is...
Could I just say one thing real fast? I want to hit on what you just said.
Yeah.
I always firmly believe God will push you to your purpose. And I think in your case, you know, look where you're at today.
Right.
Look, would you have ever imagined 30 years ago that you'd be sitting here doing a podcast talking about your career in the fire service and all the things you experienced and smelled and touched and the relationships you had and the people you came in contact with and then writing a book? And you didn't even have a high school education 30 so or years, a little over 30 years ago.
Right.
So God will push us to our purpose. And sometimes we're not smart enough to realize what direction to go, and he will push us in that direction.
Right.
And so I firmly believe where you're at today is because God pushed you to your purpose.
100%.
I just wanted to throw that in if you want on the next topic.
Oh, thanks, Chief. That means so much to me. I appreciate it, man. That means a lot. And I agree with that fullheartedly. And I also tell the young guys out there to listen to God. Also listen to him. All right. And follow what you have to do your part. And I love that you pour that out there. So the last thing I want to do, Chief, is I'm just going to give you the floor there and say, what is it that you would like to tell the listeners? A word of encouragement, anything, your books, have at it. Just tell us a little something about you that you want to get out there to the audience.
Well, God, there's so much to say.
Right.
I just, you know, you can go to my website. It's GaryLudwig.com. My books are on there. I got 7 different books on there. You know, I'm available for doing classes and lectures. So it's not only for the fire or EMS, but I speak at church groups. I talk about how blessed we are. And we truly are blessed. We're living in the best country, in the best time. This earth is approximately, as they say, they think it's about 16 billion years old. And we're living in this 100-year time span. What's the odds that we're living in this country, in this time in the world of history, and you and I are talking across the internet, looking at each other on a screen, and we all took hot showers this morning, and we got food, ample food up and down the grocery store aisles. You know, we got creatures, comfort with air conditioning and heat, and the list of stuff goes on. How blessed are we? And I talk about that with church groups that instead of looking at the glass half empty, that we should look at the glass half full, because we all are truly blessed with what we've been had, what we have, and what we've been given. I have a great grandfather that had basically 12 children. I'm sorry, a great-great-grandfather that had 12 children, and only 2 survived adulthood, one being my great-grandfather.
Wow.
And I can go to my other side of the family. My other great-great-grandfather had 13 children, and only 6 lived to be adults. Jason, kids died back then. The mortality rate, and even at the turn, the year 1900, you know what the life expectancy was an adult male, you and I? It was 43. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know. I knew it was lower, but I didn't know it was that low.
It was 43. And
wow.
At the time of Christ, it was 33. I mean, he actually died at the time of the life expectancy of what a male lived to be. They didn't have medicine. They didn't have vaccines. We didn't have antibiotics until the 1920s. We are living in blessed times. We have been given so much. We are so rich. We have clean water. There are 750 million people in this world today that don't have clean water. So I talk to church groups about how blessed we are and that we should really be thankful for what we've been given. So my point is my lectures are just not for the fire and EMS community, but they're also for church groups and other groups too, and in corporate settings too. So all that's on my website. You can go to www.GaryLudwig.com. All that information's there. And the only other thing I want to say is that, you know, what a blessing you are to the fire service. And what a blessing you are to our faith that you're able to use this mechanism to be able to use a podcast to reach out to others. And just thank you, Jason, for all you do and for the book that you have written is Jesus All We Need and is all we need. And just thank you for everything you do.
I appreciate that, Chief. No, and yeah, being able to pour out what our experiences to bless others and then, you know, to back it up with scripture, you know, it's not that what we do back scripture up, but scripture backs up the things that we're doing and stuff. It's just such a blessing to be able to do that and see you do that. And I can honestly, Marine's already racking a few places I can invite you to where we can tag team that stage and just crush it for the Lord and stuff. So
I didn't miss something. Is it? I was looking for your book real fast here. Is it Jesus All We Need or Jesus All You Need? I can't remember.
No. Well, yeah, my second book is Jesus Is All We Need, Devotions to Experience the Rescuing Love of God. And then my first book, The Rescuer, which is One Firefighter's Story, Courage, Darkness, and the Relentless Love that Saved Him. That's the testimony, the crazy time that I was through when just stuff. So I wrote that as a testimony to why I believe Jesus is all we need. So that's what the devotional is and stuff. But yeah, it's really cool to see it going through because, you know, all these dudes in the fire service I didn't know were Christians are Christians now. And it's just cool to have not, I hate using that word safe place because, you know, we're not the trust tree and firemen don't like talking like that. But it's cool that I'm creating, God's given me the opportunity to create an area where Christian firefighters can come together in a non-judgmental way and just talk about our faith. Just like if we're non-Christians talking about RIC training or something like that. It's just another space that I can provide for the brothers and sisters to hang out and talk about faith-based stuff and encourage one another as the day draws near, you know? So it's been a cool thing. So,
the only other thing I'm going to say is that we in the fire service, we experience those individuals who I call the haters. Those are the individuals, even a better word is snake. They're the ones that will want to harm you. They're the ones that will go after you because of your faith. They're the ones that will do anything they can to sneak by you on a promotion. They are really the unchristians. They might sit in the pew on Sunday and call themselves a Christian, but they're no different a Christian than if I were to sit in the garage and call myself a car. So just because I'm sitting in the garage, I'm not a car. And just because they sit in a pew on a Sunday doesn't make them a Christian. They will espouse to be Christians. They will act as though, but they will do everything they can to harm you.
Right.
My words to those that are listening is do not succumb to their level.
Right.
Move on with your faith and move on with what God has blessed you with. And there's nobody watches you more than those that don't like you. And your job is to put on an awesome show and make themselves even more fuming. So I run into a lot of firefighters like that. And there's a difference between pranks and bullying and harassment. And I run into firefighters who are definitely being harassed or bullied or somebody's trying to disparage them. Someone's trying to ruin their reputation.
Right.
And you just have to push on. You can't let them define you. And that's my final words I like to try to say to those listeners you have.
Oh, well, I'm going to bring you back on to a future show because there's some great stuff I'd love to hit in that area with you, too, which would be great because I know a lot of listeners get that. And then what I want to finish up on is thank you for that compliment. It means so much to me because being in this space, yeah, I get beat from all sides. And the ones that hurt the worst are proclaiming Christians. Like if someone's an atheist, I really don't. I mean, I care so much for you, but you made it very clear where you stand in the world. Okay. So what you say doesn't hurt me. But when a brother comes alongside, either a brother firefighter or worse, a brother in Christ or who says they're a brother in Christ, they attack you, man, it just flat sucks. There's no other way to explain it. I know you've experienced it with conversations we've had off to the side. But one thing that I do love is giving guys tangibles. And I'm going to finish with this one. Not too long ago, a guy came my way and he was a smaller Midwestern fire department. And he was a rescue guy. And he started just pounding and beating me and all this. And finally, I just threw it down to him. I said, bro, off to the side. I fought more fire and probation than you are in your whole career. So just take it down a notch. And I hate being like that. And you know where I'm coming from as a guy who was at St. Louis. You don't want to pull into that, but this dude needed it, you know? And so I gave it to him. And then later on, cause I realized I actually was kind of a bully move, you know? And I had to, hey bro, I wasn't trying to be mean there, but look at the way you were hitting me heavy, you know? And we brotherly hugged it out after that. But anyways, Chief Gary Ludwig, what a blessing to have you on. I'm going to have you come back through again because this was just the tip of the iceberg, what we talked about, man. I'd love to have you come through again.
Oh, I would love to. I mean, I love talking this stuff and what an awesome person you are, Jason, just having a conversation with you. I know we've been on the phone and we go, okay, we got it. And then 2 hours later, we're still talking. Right. You're such a brother and you're such a friend and you're just such a genuine person. And I love you tremendously. So thank you, Jason.
All right, Chief. Love you too, brother, man. All right. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Jesus Is All We Need podcast. I hope you enjoy it and have a blessed day. I hope you found this episode as encouraging as I did. Be sure to click the like, subscribe, or whatever button you see that will notify you of future shows, because we have some awesome guests lined up that you're not going to want to miss. Until next week, remember this, my friends. Jesus is all we need. I love you guys. I want to take just a second to thank the team at Life Audio for their partnership with us on the podcast. If you go to lifeaudio.com, you will find dozens of other faith-centered podcasts in their network. They've got shows about prayer, Bible study, parenting, and more. So head on over to lifeaudio.com and check them out.
The love of God is immeasurable. It's unchanging. It's indescribable. Because God loves you so much, you can sleep through the night in peace. With Abide Bible Sleep Meditation, you can fall asleep fast with relaxing sleep stories based on Scripture. To start listening now, go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Abide Bible Sleep Meditation. You can also download the Abide app for more biblical meditations at abide.com.